Gordon Hayward could be coming back today. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum making strides again. And let's put this Kevin Love trade stuff to bed. Please, it's the Monday Locked On Celtics. Millie's, let's go.
So hype right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama, baby, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days back with the vengeance at all the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly.
Monday, start of your work week. If you're a Patriots fan, I'm sorry. We're going to try to make you feel better about the best team in Boston right now. That's the Boston Celtics. And I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com, joined by Chuck McKenney of RedsArmy.com to talk about all that stuff I talked about for at the beginning. And let's start with Gordon Hayward, Chuck. We were at practice on Sunday, and Gordon Hayward said, yeah, Monday's a possibility. The bone is completely healed. He said the plate and the screws that were put in to kind of facilitate the healing have worked perfectly. They actually make that hand maybe a little stronger than his right hand. And so it's just a matter of pain tolerance because the tissues around the hand in there might still be sore. So feels like he's going to go through shoot around on Monday morning and could be ready to go for Monday evening against the Cavaliers, which, great. Awesome.
Yeah, you know, I'm surprised. It's a couple weeks early, and I always feel, you know, I felt like with this injury, the Celtics would be cautious. They generally are. Even though, as we've seen Hayward progress and watching him shoot, I think we started to believe that he would be back early. But maybe I thought he would be back, you know, in 5 weeks instead of six. You know, Monday is surprising to me, but you know, I'm no doctor. And if they say he's ready to go, then he's ready to go. You know, this could be an interesting week, right? I mean, you got Cleveland and then Indiana and Philly.
Yep.
I don't know if they'll want to ease Hayward back at all. If they'll want to play, maybe they do want to get him in Monday and he takes a break Wednesday and then he's back against Philly. I'm not sure if they're thinking in terms of who they want him, you know, if they're trying to stage his return so that he's on the court versus Philly, they might not be thinking that short term. But it would be nice to go into that Philly game with Hayward, who having another game under his belt, because I'd love to kick their ass. and I want Gordon on the court to help us do it.
So I don't think there's any kind of consideration when it comes to, like, he broke his hand. And it was his non-shooting hand. So he's been running. He's been shooting. He's been at practices. He's been in film sessions. He's been around. And now that the bone is healed, that's when they allowed him to practice. And basically it's just a matter of taking a hit. And he said, actually, a coach, in a drill hit him and it's a little sore, but fine. So it's not like coming back and it's an ankle or a knee where, you know, you want to ease him back in and see how it responds. It was a broken bone in his offhand and the bone is healed. So play him as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Now, if people are saying like now, and it's funny, this psychology, because there's a Gordon Hayward answer to this. You said, oh God, he's coming back so early. And people are thinking, like, that's a natural thing. Like, they said 6 weeks and it's four. Are we sure? And then so he was asked, like, this was the early return. And this is his response. Quote, I think as it's steadily improving and you can do more, you start to think coming back a little bit earlier. I think you set the timeline a little bit later than what you're hoping for, just so that you guys, he says, as the media and everyone else isn't like, if you're late, like, what's the deal? So
yeah, then it becomes a setback.
Right.
Yeah.
So right. If they said 4 weeks and we went into today, Like, let's pretend for a second. And we said 4 weeks. And then he comes out today and goes, yeah, maybe. We'll see. And people will go, what? Okay. But you said 4 weeks and it's 4 weeks now. So
yeah, what's wrong? What's wrong? Yeah.
Why do we have to see? But yeah. Because they said 6 weeks and it's 4 weeks, people are like, whoa, take it easy there, bucko. Let's hold on there. But it was always going to be 4 weeks. And I think from the beginning, I was thinking this is probably going to be somewhere around 4 weeks, because every other player who's had this injury has come back in about 4 weeks. Like Aaron Baines did last year. Same exact thing. 4 weeks, plate in his hand. So this is right about on time.
Yeah, no, that's fair, right? We tend to react that way. So like you said, it's not an ankle, it's not a knee. There's no need to kind of stress test it, or worry about how it's going to impact his running or pace in the game. You know, he's just going to hit the court. So he comes back and he's a starter, and yep, he's playing 30 minutes again. Is that what you're expecting?
30. Maybe. The only thing that he doesn't have is he's not in game shape. And as much as he runs and is in good physical condition, you know, you go out there and you play a game, it's just different. And so his wins might be a factor early. So 30 minutes, maybe in shorter stints. So my guess is he's one of the first subs out. Like he starts and plays 5 minutes, and Brad has been taking Jason Tatum out so he can play with the second unit. Mm-hmm. I think Hayward and Tatum now come out early, and then they go back in like at the end of the first quarter, maybe at like the 10:30 mark or the 11-minute mark, or like 10:30 in, that would be like the 1:30 mark or whatever. You guys, you know what I'm talking about. Get another quick burst, sit quarter break, and then start the second quarter. So it might be a little bit of a different kind of rotation for the first couple of games as Hayward kind of gets his win back, and you just might play him shorter stints. But he could make it to 30.
Yeah, and you know, playing a team like Cleveland, I think, is not a bad way to kind of get back into the action if hopefully the Celtics have, you know, a double digit lead and there's no need to play him extra minutes. Right. And I'm just curious how, you know, this will put Smart back with the second unit. I think we love Smart. We love Smart there. We love his playmaking ability there. Is there any concern that, you know, Wanamaker's been playing really well? Is there any concern that, you know, putting Smart with Wanamaker, will they be playing more minutes together? I know it all varies on how Brad staggers the guys, but could Wanamaker be sort of, an unintended consequence of Hayward's return that somehow he's less effective?
But I'll tell you, if the net effect is, oh, what's going wrong with Brad Wanamaker, then I'm okay with that.
It's crazy that I asked that question, right? No, it's crazy that I even thought about that.
But it's a testament to how good Wanamaker's been playing.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think Semi Ojeleye and Carson Edwards are going to be the two guys that might suffer the most. Wanamaker's been playing so well that you can have Smart and Wanamaker come in with the second unit, and then maybe Wanamaker loses a few minutes. Like he played against Denver, what he played 19 minutes against Denver. Miami, he had 19 minutes. Let's see. So he's kind of in that 18 and a half against New York. So maybe he goes down to like 12, but Semi Ojeleye is not going to be getting 25 minutes like he did against, or 28 minutes like he did against Denver. Or what did he have in the other game here? Where's Shimmy? 24, 26 against Miami. Like that's gonna be, maybe he plays some, but those minutes for Gordon Hayward are gonna come out of Shemmy's minutes. And they're gonna come out of, like I said, Carson Edwards. I wanna see Carson Edwards go to the G League now, like I've said multiple times in the podcast. Like we don't need him. We've got Wanamaker there. Shemmy's been playing better lately, so maybe you don't want to really take away too many of his minutes. You want to keep that going a little bit. You can maybe get away with playing Gordon 25 as he just gets his wind back, and you want to ease him in that way a little bit. But Carson Edwards, I don't think they need him right now. Go get your confidence in the G League. So I think rotation wise, that's going to be where it comes from.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And it's interesting. You know, a week ago we're talking about, you know, Marcus needing time off, right? With all these nicks and bruises, and then he's sick. And, you know, so he takes off one game, and then he's back, and now suddenly that's it. Yeah, I mean, I thought he might need more time, but he seems like he's back in the mix now. Well, so that's it. He gets a few days off, and now he's good to go.
Right. I guess. You know, today, Monday, it would be a great night to let Marcus take a day off. You know, just load manage. Just say, okay, we got a back-to-back coming up. You've done well. The oblique might be a little bit sore. Take the day off. Gordon's coming back. We'll have Wanamaker play your role. And we should be able to beat the Cavs without you, Marcus. So take a break. And this way that kind of allows Brad Stevens to work Hayward in without worrying about minutes. I don't know. I think it would be a good opportunity there. And then you have him fresh going into that back-to-back, a tough back-to-back. Indy's no joke. Philly's no joke. You're going to need him. So why not? Why not?
Yeah. And, you know, we haven't even talked about the two guys who are just playing ridiculous basketball right now. So it's crazy that we haven't touched on the Jays yet.
I know.
Dealing with everybody else.
Why don't we take a break and do that and touch on the Jays, because they've been awesome. We'll do that. And remember, hey, if you're a Spotify listener and you use the Spotify Wrap, use that to show us your top Locked On podcast for the year. Take a screenshot, tag us at Locked On Live, or tag me, Reds_Army_John. Tag the show Twitter account at LO Celtics. Tag us on Twitter. We'll share and retweet. Coming back with more Locked On Celtics next.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
So maybe the big question here with Gordon Hayward's impending return is, how does that impact Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown getting their shots? Obviously, they've been great. They've combined for, in the last three games, I think it's 47, 50, and 58 points in the last three games. They're on fire. They're awesome. Everybody's in love with them again. But with Gordon back, you wonder, is he going to take away shots? I don't know about you, Chuck. Gordon coming back is the least of my concerns, because if anything, he's going to create more opportunities. Because if Jason Tatum's getting double teamed, where are those doubles going to come from if you throw Gordon Hayward in that lineup? Who are you going to double off? You're going to double off of Daniel Tice? Like, okay, swing, and then it's a dunk. Like, I don't think Gordon Hayward is the type of player where his return is going to be like, well, now I need 20 shots. Like, the one thing that Gordon Hayward does is give up shots to pass and work the ball around. If any player on this team is going to make that next right play, it's going to be Gordon. And maybe there's going to be stretches where he hits 3-4 shots in a row. And okay, so then you have to focus on him, and then it's bing, 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 assists like crazy, and those guys are going to get their shots. I think if anything, just like I said in the first segment, the shots are going to come away from the other guys that probably shouldn't be shooting as much.
Yeah, no doubt. I think you hit it right on the head. If there was any other player coming back, you'd maybe have a discussion about the shots and how they're going to be distributed. But, you know, Hayward is one of your top assist guys. He's also, I think, the team's leading rebounder. So he does so much, and he's so productive in so many other areas that he's going to be effective without getting his shots. And he's been so efficient this year that even if he gets 12 shots, he's making eight. And then he gets a couple of free throws, and he's up right. to like, you know, he's up to 18 points. And that's what we're seeing from him. So exactly what you said, he's going to fit in seamlessly, because of the way he plays. But man, just Brown and Tatum, it's been like near orgasmic to just watch those two, because, you know, this is what we've been hoping for is their rise. And we've seen glimpses from Brown, and we've seen, you know, stretches from Tatum. And this really is just that last game, that seeing it come together. Actually, it wasn't the Denver game. It was the Miami game, right? When they combined for 50 something points. When we had that sequence where Brown had the dunk and Tatum hit the three, right?
Yeah.
I forget who that was against.
So that sequence was Denver.
It was Denver.
Yeah. In Miami, they combined for 50. New York was when they combined for 58. That was like the big explosion.
Right. So I can't even keep the,
yeah.
You know,
in which
I can't even keep it straight. They're happening. So it's happening so frequently. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And it's just, right. This is what we all hope for. And I think, you know, there's no way to go but up with these two. I mean, I think we've reached the point where we can say, you know, they're going to be stars. They're going to be all stars. It's just a matter of, you know, are they top 10 players? Or are they, you know, a top 20 player? And just to see how that all shakes out, because and then watching them feed off of each other. And that's another beauty to the two of them is, you know, and it's, you know, Jalen talked about that whole fire with that whole fire and ice comment. They're distinctly different players. And I think that adds to it.
Yeah, because when you need a bucket, just like, oh, shit, we're screwed, somebody go create something, well, then you go to Jason. But if you are working the ball around, you can get, like, if you need a slashing, aggressive guy to attack a defense, like Brown is going to be the guy that really is able to probe and make a good play and who knows, draw a foul, whatever, dunk on somebody. So they've really started to feel out the game, feel each other's games out. It's really just, I wrote about it after the Denver game, that this is what Danny Ainge was thinking about when the Kawhi Leonard trade came up, or the Paul George trade came up, or the Anthony Davis trade came up. Like, if we could get commitments from those teams or from those players, then yeah, okay, you take the chance on obviously Kawhi Leonard or Paul George or Anthony Davis. But these guys had the potential to be so good that you don't just take the chance. Like,
right.
There are people who said, you know what? It's Kawhi. Just do it. And you can say, well, Kawhi led Toronto to a championship. Well, there's no guarantee that he would have meshed with Kyrie last year and that it would have worked. Maybe they would have lost somewhere along the way. But the point is, you don't just say, well, we've got these young players. I don't know. You know, go ahead. Fine. Screw it. We'll take a chance on it. With these guys, what Danny Ainge said was, Tatum especially, like, all right, well, he's going to be really good. So if I'm not going to get this better guy for a long time, then I'm just going to stick with this guy because maybe he can get just as good or close. And so we're starting to see the potential. And like Danny Ainge, if he had, you know, if he was me or you, should be taking a victory lap, like out there on a bike with a foghorn, just riding around the court. After that dunk, after that three, just a little like Pee Wee Herman bike, just haha, told you so. So this is what we were looking for, and it's great to see. And the thing is that they're 22, 21, like they could very easily be all-stars this year. Like they're averaging somewhere north of 20 points a game, 7 rebounds apiece. Tatum's averaging 5 assists. Like they could both be all-stars.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. And it's, you know, Tatum's going to get that 5 years, $170 million extension, right?
Yep,
so
for sure.
We're looking at, and Kemba is really the perfect sort of third, complementary. He's more than that, right? But he's just not that, dominant personality,
right,
to kind of, sidetrack these two. You think for the next 4 to 5 years, those guys are all locked in. Hayward's really the only one who we'll have to see what happens after next year. But man, the pieces are all there. And unless, you know, barring some sort of, I mean, you do see this all the time in the NBA, personalities don't always mesh or guys want to play somewhere else. But I feeling pretty confident to say at least for the next five, you know, we're locked in with them.
Right.
And that's damn exciting.
It should be. Yeah. I mean, things do change, and all it takes is one thing to go wrong and it could derail all of it. Like, that is absolutely possible. You never know. It could be something like the Hayward injury, or it could be something like I don't mean to bring up that horrible memory, but think about how much that derailed everything, you know? There could be something catastrophic that way. Could be somebody's attitude. Could be somebody, you know, somebody getting in somebody's ear. Who knows what it could be? Any number of things, infinite possibilities here. But if things stay kind of the way they are and the way they've been in Boston, like aside from a Kyrie personality thing and the construction of last year's team, like there hasn't been Knicks level dysfunction. Like, it's just been, that was like the 1 year where it was a problem. So you can feel comfortable, you can feel good, and just hope that as they progress, they understand, like, we are better playing with each other than we are going off on individual forays and saying, my turn, your turn. So, and the really how they've been the best the past few games is by working together. So, and you're right, Kemba is the absolute perfect guy here because he's good, man. He just got his contract. He's good. He doesn't have to like go crazy. He's not playing for anything other than wins. You know, these guys are getting that. Jalen got his money. Jason's going to get his money. They know that's going to happen. You could just play free and say, you know, whatever, however it goes, it goes. And I don't think Gordon Hayward's worried about it. So, if whatever happens with Hayward happens, but the construction of these guys, the way these four guys fit, you've got Kemba, who can be your closer, Tatum, who alternate closer, but an ISO scorer, Jalen's a slasher, Hayward's kind of like a do-it-all, ball handler, distributor. Any one of those guys can score. I mean, there's four guys on that floor that are close to or who are averaging 20 points a game. That's insane. And the fact that they can complement each other is encouraging.
And
extraordinarily encouraging.
And lastly, Tatum has elevated himself defensively this season.
Yes.
So the two of them are complete players. We're not talking just one-dimensional guys here.
Yep.
They're both complete players, excellent defenders. That's just, you know, that is another angle that just get you drooling, trying to, you know, contain myself.
Right. You know, you throw Smart into that mix, and that's why the Celtics are good. So why in the world would anybody want to trade one of those guys? Yet, some people do. And for Kevin Love, because those rumors have popped up, we will just take a huge dump all over those rumors next when we come back in the Locked On Celtics podcast. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. I don't want to hear it from any of you if you're like trade for Kevin Love. I don't want to hear it. Stop yelling at the radio or your phone or wherever you are. Stop. It's not happening. Kevin Love rumors have now resurfaced because, as has been reported over the weekend. The Cavaliers are finally listening to offers for Kevin Love. And Adrian Wojnarowski said prior teams that had interest are these teams, that teams, the Boston Celtics. Yeah, the Boston Celtics have had interest in the past for Kevin Love. But Kevin Love makes $29 million, and he is 31 years old, and he plays no defense, even though he can grab some rebounds. So, Chuck, who the hell will the Celtics trade for Kevin Love?
There's nobody. It's so silly. It's just again, this isn't 2017. I think, and the Celtics were never interested in Love because of his defense, right? So we have players now who can create Love's level of offense. So why would you want to swap those out? Why would you want to even someone like Hayward? Why would you want to swap him for Love when Love is older? Slightly older and has a few more years on the contract. It's just nothing adds up. Again, all the talk about the Celtics' glaring weakness is a defensive big,
right?
Love does not solve that problem. He's not even close. So there's really it's really a case of apples and oranges, and again, people just kind of regurgitating 2015 interest in the Celtics, you know, when the Celtics had interest in him or whatever it was, 2017. It just doesn't add up. So please, people, just stop. It's more realistic we've talked about this many, many times. The Celtics, if they're going to make a move for somebody, it has to be for somebody who's making what, like 7-8 million. It has to be the Cantor match or the Daniel Tice match. And then, you know, maybe one of the younger players like Ogilvy, like, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's
right.
Where they can't afford to take on anyone who's making more than $10 million without disrupting their core, right? Without moving someone like, even if you want to scale it back and say, we're willing to trade Marcus. Well, then it's like, okay, but then that's a huge disruption. And what are you getting back? So if you're going to keep the core intact, right? Then you're looking at, you know, the salaries that need to match up equal, like, what? It's like 7 or 8 million, right? There's nothing more there.
No. So the problem with Kevin Love making $29 million is you have to match. And the Celtics salaries that can match are, well, first of all, Jaylen Brown is out. So because of his extension, there's the rule that it's a weird rule where his salary counts as the for the outgoing team, it counts as the average of all remaining years, including this one. But for the Celtics, it only counts as his salary. So like for this year. So it's just almost impossible to match. So Jaylen Brown is out. That leaves Kemba, Hayward, Smart, and Tatum. You're obviously not trading Tatum, okay? Marcus Smart, Gordon Hayward, you just signed Kemba, so he's out. It's Marcus Smart or Gordon Hayward. No. No. So you can't pile enough together. And also, what do the Cavaliers want? Even if Danny Ainge says, okay, you know what? I'll trade Gordon Hayward. Do the Cavaliers want Gordon Hayward? No, they don't want Gordon Hayward. They want Tatum or Brown, young players and picks. That's what they want. They want to trade Kevin Love, a potential piece, to somebody else's, like, I don't know which team, maybe Portland, maybe Denver. Maybe Denver is in line for a consolidation of their talent, or Portland's looking for a desperation move. Maybe, like, I keep going back to Denver because they've got the Will Barton, Gary Harris, not Jamal Murray, they just signed him to the extension. But they've got the young wings that they could trade, and you throw draft picks in there. That's the type of trade that Cleveland's looking for.
Yeah.
Gordon Hayward, even if Boston says, you know what, he's not going to re-sign here, let's pretend they say that, and say, okay, fine, we'll throw him in there. Cleveland's going to be like, nah, no thanks. Because what are you going to – you're going to throw in the Memphis pick? You're going to throw him in other draft picks? The Celtics' own picks aren't going to be worth anything. They have Milwaukee's pick, which isn't going to be worth anything. So it's just not it's not going to be the right deal. And you, what, Romeo Langford? We don't know what Romeo Langford's going to be. Grant Williams, he hasn't shown enough to be like that valuable of a piece. It's not, there's no possible thing. Even with Marcus Smart as the centerpiece of it, you still have to throw in other players. And I don't know that Marcus would be great for them to like kind of snap them back into like shape. Like all of this Beeline stuff after, like, yeah, that's been breaking. Like Smart would be a great guy to get in there and like kick everybody's ass. But that's the extent of his value to them. They want younger guys on these rookie deals that they can build around. So I don't think there's any possibility of a trade for Kevin Love. I just don't see it.
Well, yeah, because it doesn't work for the Cavs either. So, I mean, it's not realistic for both sides. I don't know why the hell we're talking about it, right? But when this comes up, you know, that's the discussion. And then it's the snowball effect. And then, within minutes, I'm seeing tweets that say, we got to go after Miles Turner or we have to go after so-and-so. And it's, you know, I'm just not feeling it now that February may be a different animal, right? But I think we've seen some good things out of Tice, and I think that they're going to be hopeful that Rob Williams is going to continue to progress. They're not going to shake up the core just to get somebody to compete against Embiid. Now, people often say, you know, we're going to get killed on the glass against these bigger teams, whether it's Indiana or whether it's Toronto. You know, the Bucks have some bigger players too, but it works both ways. We create mismatches on our end too, right? When you're running Hayward, Brown, Tatum, and Kemba out there, we create mismatches both ways. So again, we just have to be so good and so efficient offensively that we can outscore those teams. And there are only a handful of teams that are really that big anyway. So I try not to get too bogged down in that. Because there's just not a realistic target out there where you could say, oh, if we get this guy, he's a surefire, he's the surefire anecdote to those teams. It's not out there. We're trying to force square pegs into round holes and solve a problem that I don't think Ainge is gonna take that gamble.
No, I'm as you're talking, I'm just kind of like scrolling through these salaries of players who are making in that $8-9 million range that maybe you could piece a trade together. And again, I keep going back to like who's going to want Enes Kanter and Daniel Tice? You'd like, okay, you say Tice and you throw in if for some reason, some team's infatuated with Romeo Langford and you throw the Memphis pick in there and say, okay, that's enough to make it work. Well, that's $8.6 million, and then you get up to like 1.25 or 125% of that. So you can get upwards closer to like $10 million. But even in the $10 million range, I don't see any power forwards or centers that make any sense. The one I can – like Robert Covington – I don't know, maybe Dwight Powell out of Dallas. Are they going to like, does that move the needle for anybody?
No,
you know, I'm just keep going. Like Denver's not trading Jeremy Grant. They just signed him. Taj Gibson from New York. Like that. No, I'm like, he's done. I just don't see like, I'm just going down this list of power forwards and centers and I don't see anybody. Wait, they list Jason Tatum as a power forward? That's stupid. Maxi Kleber, that Dallas, they're winning. They like him. So I don't see the possibility. As we've said before on this show, it's just the combination of players who are out there, plus players who are available, plus players in the right price range, plus teams that want what Boston has to offer. It's almost nothing, like almost nothing. And I'm sure there might be players out there that maybe I don't know about. Maybe there's a Mo Bamba, but
look, and we saw some of it in the Denver game. I mean, Jokic had a pretty good stat line, right? It seemed like they were kicking it in him into the post, and he was getting what he wanted. But that just slows down the game for them. Yes. So if we're playing Philly and they're constantly feeding Embiid, then those are just possessions where, you know, Ben Simmons isn't, you know, streaking down the court on fast breaks.
Exactly.
I'm not trying to diminish like the impact of some player like Embiid, but you know, I think most teams want to play at a faster pace, push the ball. And if every possession is let's kick it into our lumbering center and watch him make some moves, I think that slows it down for them offensively. That's really not where they want to go. So, you know, we have those – even if you have those mismatches, I think sometimes you're like, all right, if they're going to feed this player in the post 20 times, then we'll live with that. Because Absolutely. Chances are we're going to come down and we're going to be getting 3 points to their two. So, you know, it may sound like I'm just diminishing Embiid or those players, but I think – I think we're good enough. I think we're good enough and we're strong enough offensively to offset those deficiencies.
And you know what else happens if you drop it down to Embiid in the post and he takes like a little jump hook and he misses? You get out on a break, and who's the last player behind the play? It's Embiid, because he was just down at the rim taking his shot, and it missed, and now that ball's moving, and he's behind the entire play. Rather than running, what he should be doing is running a pick and roll where he's up at the free throw line or something and diving. Okay, running a pick and roll and rim running, that's a good way to do it. That's much more efficient because it's much more likely to result in something. Also, if you pick, you can run pick and pop with him a little bit, or Simmons is the guy who just drives, and then Embiid sees that and starts to retreat, and then he can get back on defense. So I agree with you. The way this style of play works, the Celtics are constructed so uniquely that, yes, there is that disadvantage, like you said, but also, like you said, how do you guard the Celtics? How do you guard the Celtics? Because if Tatum and Brown and Kemba and Hayward are out there just switching everything on defense and then getting out into transition and then there are cross matches, like it's not easy. It's not easy to defend them. So all that to say, just no Kevin Love. No to Kevin Love, and probably probably no to any other center until the buyout market maybe materializes, and then you see if you can add some depth. But who knows? Maybe by then, Vincent Poirier, with all of his G League work, kind of snaps into place, and he becomes a guy that you can count on in case of emergency. I don't know. But we'll leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that. Poirier's the man.
Poirier's the man. It looks good in Maine. We'll leave it at that. I hope you've enjoyed the show. All of you regular listeners, all of you new listeners, hopefully you have heard enough to subscribe. All of you regular listeners, please give me that 5-star rating and good written review. And, of course, share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.